I prefer not to speak in terms of temperature targets, but rather atmospheric composition targets. And in 2008, I wrote a paper with several of the top relevant experts in the world in carbon cycle, paleoclimate, climate modeling, and the relevant disciplines, and we concluded that we should be aiming for no more than about 350 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. And since that time, we've achieved remarkably accurate measurements of the Earth's energy imbalance. And what we found is that the planet is out of balance, as you would expect. When you add CO2 to the atmosphere, it reduces heat radiation to space. Therefore, we have more energy coming in from the sun than heat being radiated to space. And it turns out that that imbalance, which is about 0.6 watt per meter squared averaged over the entire planet, land and ocean, implies that you would need to reduce CO2 from the present 400 ppm to about 350 ppm to restore energy balance. And that's what you need to stabilize climate. The amount of energy is 0.6 watts per meter squared doesn't sound like much, but if you convert it to the number of Hiroshima atomic bombs, it's about 400,000 per day, every day of the year. So it's a lot of energy. It's going into the ocean, and that's warming ocean is the source of the biggest threat that we face, and that is the melting of the ice shelves around Antarctica and Greenland, which then speeds up the loss of mass from the ice sheets and the sea level rise. So I would like to talk about climate justice and governmental honesty. How can we achieve that? You know, our parents did not know that they were causing a problem for future generations by burning fossil fuels. But we can only pretend that we don't know. And it's a difficult thing for the public to recognize because the climate changes only slowly because of the inertia of the system. The danger is, because the planet is now out of energy balance, there's more warming that's in the pipeline without any additional gases. And that's going to take us up to and into dangerous territory. We're on the edge of handing our children a climate system in which consequences will be out of their control. For example, disintegration of ice sheet and sea level rise of many meters, which would mean we would lose all coastal cities, and more than half of the largest cities in the world are on coastlines. That's the one injustice from one generation to another. The second is north to south, because almost all the greenhouse gases have been added by countries in the north. But the biggest consequences are actually at low latitudes, where the warming is already making it uncomfortable in the summer and making it difficult to work outdoors. So there's a north to south injustice. And there's one species, humans, that are taking over the planet and threatening the existence of as much as a quarter to a half of the other species on the planet. That's the estimate of the IPCC for the end of the number of species that would be committed to extinction by the end of this century if we stay on business as usual. Today, China is the biggest emitter, and the United States second, and India third. But it's not today's emissions that cause the climate change. It's the integrated emissions over time, the cumulative emissions. And for that, the United States is responsible for more than one quarter. Europe is responsible for more than one quarter. China for 10%, India for 3%, and so on. But even that exaggerates the responsibility of the developing countries. If you look at the per capita contribution to cumulative emissions, the United Kingdom, the United States, and Germany are by far the most responsible. China is an order of magnitude smaller, and India's contribution is so small it almost disappears. The problem is that fossil fuels appear to the consumer to be the cheapest energy. They're not really cheapest because they don't include their full cost to society. They're partially subsidized, but mainly they don't include the effects of air pollution and water pollution on human health. If your child gets asthma, you have to pay the bill. The fossil fuel company doesn't. And the climate effects, which are beginning to be significant and will be much larger in the future, are also not included in the price of the fossil fuels. So the solution would be fairly straightforward. Let's add into the price of fossil fuels the total cost, which you can't do suddenly, but you can do it gradually over time so that you can people have time to adjust. So I argue that this should be done, it has to be across the board, across all fossil fuels, coal, oil, and gas, at the source, the domestic mine or the port of entry. And I also argue that that money should be given to the public, give an equal amount to all legal residents of the country. That way, the person who does better than average in limiting their carbon footprint will actually make money. And in fact, two-thirds of the people would come out ahead. And it would also address the growing income inequality in the world, which is occurring in almost all countries, because the low-income people would tend to have a lower carbon footprint. People who fly around the world and have big houses would pay more, but they can afford to do that. So that's a transparent, market-based solution, a conservative solution, which stimulates the economy. The economic studies in the United States show that after 10 years, if you added $10 a ton of CO2 carbon fee, distributed the money to the public, after 10 years, it would reduce emissions 30%, and after 20 years, more than 50%. And it would spur the economy, creating more than 3 million new jobs. So furthermore, this is the only viable international approach. You cannot ask each of 190 countries to individually limit their emissions. What we have to do is have the price of fossil fuels honest. That requires only a few of the major players to agree, let's have a rising common carbon fee. And those countries that don't want to have that fee will put a border duty on products from those countries. And furthermore, we will rebate to our manufacturers the carbon fee when they export a product to a non-participating nation. So this, economists agree, is a fair way to do it, and it could rapidly move us off of fossil fuels. Almost all would go along because they would rather collect the money themselves rather than have us collect it at our borders. So it's a very simple way to give you a control of the system. But what we are hearing is, although Christiana Figueres says, many have said we need a carbon price, and investment would be so much easier with a carbon price, but life is much more complex than that. So what we're talking about instead is the same old thing, that was tried in Kyoto, asking each country to promise, I'll reduce my emissions, I will cap my emissions, I'll reduce them 20% or whatever they decide they can do. You know, in science, when you do a well-controlled experiment and get a well-documented result, you expect that if you do the experiment again, you're going to get the same result. So why are we talking about doing the same thing again? I don't like to use crude language, but I learned this from my mother, so I'll use it anyway. This is half-assed and it's half-baked. It's half-assed because there's no way to make it global. You have to beg each nation. So I went to Germany to speak with, was hoping to speak to Merkel, but I got cut off at Sigmar Gabriel, the minister. He said, we're going to do cap and trade with offsets. And I said, that won't work. We've tried that. And so I said, what's the cap on India? And he said, we'll tighten our carbon cap. Well, Germany's now 2% of the world emissions. So him tightening the German carbon cap is not going to solve the problem. You've got to have something that will work globally. And it's half-baked because there's no enforcement mechanism. So I think our you know, what I hear is all the ministers are coming here, or the heads of state, and they're planning to clap each other on the back and say, oh, we're really doing great. This is a very successful conference, and we're going to address the climate problem. Well, if that's what happens, then we're screwing the next generation and the following ones, because we're being stupid in doing the same thing again that we did, what, 18 years ago? So what's the effect of, you know, you try very hard and you say, okay, we're going to reduce our nation's emissions. Well, or an individual reduces their emissions. The one effect of that is to reduce the demand for the product and keep the price low. As long as fossil fuels are dirt cheap, they will keep being used. It's like burning coal is like burning dirt. You just take a bulldozer and you can bulldoze it out of the ground. It's very cheap, but it does not include its cost to society. It's a very dirty fuel with some negative effects, which we now understand very well. We can't pretend that we don't know what's going to happen if we stay on this path.